never give the whole job to a single contractor, right? Make sure that you split it up piecemeal, because, you know, contractors are just never short of work, and they'll take on 20 jobs, even if it's just one, you know, person, and they'll work on your property for maybe like a day or two, move over to the next person and do the same thing. So you're basically stuck with them for 6, 7, 8 months, and they just drag you along.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Unpack podcast. Today we have another very special guest. If you've ever considered investing in property in the US, then you should probably keep listening. If you follow me on Clubhouse, then you'll know that I host weekly rooms about investing in property abroad, finances, and expat living. So for those who don't know, I have been an expat for over 5 years now. I've lived in over 5 countries on 4 different continents. And on my Clubhouse, I host rooms where I invite different people from different countries, and they come on and they chat more about the visa regulations, the process of buying a property in a specific country, and whether buying a property comes with residency. So these are great tips for somebody who is thinking about moving abroad or investing in property abroad. So speaking of Clubhouse, if you're on Clubhouse, you should give me a follow at LerottoLB, like all my other handles on Twitter and Instagram, and join my weekly sessions where we unpack all things property and finance related.
A playlist original.
So hi, Brian. Thank you again for reaching out to me on Clubhouse. I was so fascinated by all the insightful things you were sharing in my room, and I thought, okay, I need to get this guy on my podcast. And I really appreciate you taking time to chat to me more about investing in property in the US. So before we dive into it, I want you to tell us more about who is Brian.
There's a lot of question. So Brian is, I'm not sure if I'm a young man anymore, but I've lived in the US for about 20 years. Born and raised in Zimbabwe. Have lived in Missouri, Florida, and in between then I moved to France for about 2 years. Paris, and then I've been in Chicago, Illinois for about 8 years now. I work in finance, just actually starting a new role at AllianceBernstein. But I've also dabbled in real estate quite extensively over the past 11, 12 years. That's where I'm, like, in a nutshell. And then in a former life, I was an Olympic athlete.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Wow. Okay. So I want to know more about, like, your real estate journey. So are you a property investor? So what exactly do you do in real estate?
Yeah. So my journey sort of started about 12 years ago. One of my closest friends, who was my coach then, and his name is Ken, was pretty big into, like, real estate. They owned, like, a lot of townhomes, single family homes. And he sort of caught my interest in real estate because of what he used to tell me. And actually, that actually prompted me to focus on a real estate track for my MBA. And I bought my first property in 2009 in Tallahassee, just a simple townhome. It was a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom townhome. I do remember, my mortgage was about $850. I had 2 roommates, both paying me about $400 a month. And so I was basically paying $50 towards my mortgage every month. So that's how my journey sort of started. And just around that time was when the real estate crash was just, you know, sort of starting. And I remember looking extensively at property in Atlanta, because that market was actually hit pretty bad, and I couldn't find anything suitable for about a year to about a year and a half. And I'd already taken out, like, sort of like personal loans to buy a property there. And I eventually found a condo in Decatur, Georgia for about $20,000. It was a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom condo there that I rented again for about $700-800 a month. And I held that, for about 6-7 years until I eventually got rid of it. So that's sort of where my journey started. And then when I moved to Illinois in 2012, I sort of took my time to get back into the market. Probably took me about a year and a half to 2 years to get back into the game, because real estate is such a localized market, and it's different from place to place. And the type of properties that you find here were so different from what you find in places like Florida and Atlanta. And I eventually did a first deal that I did here was in a place called Peoria, Illinois, which is about a 3-hour drive from Chicago. And the reason why I did a deal there was because I had a buddy from college who's from that town that was doing some deals over there. And we sort of talked and we drove up there and I took a look at a property and bought a house in a small town. When I say small town, I mean like a small little village, pretty much. Bought a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom house that was converted into a 4-bedroom. Bought it for basically $12,000. Yeah, it was 12 grand. Bought it for 12 grand. Fixed up the house, got it 1 room, converted it into a 4-bedroom. I think we're all in at about 26K, and then turned around less than 6 months later and sold it for $38,000. Right. So that was probably, in all honesty, from a flipping standpoint, probably one of the easiest deals that I've ever done, because it was hands-free for me. Right. It was just basically, I was over here, my buddy was taking care of the projects. Yeah. And then, you know, the work got done and we sold the property in less than 6 months. So that was my first sort of deal in Illinois. So that sort of prompted me to want to get into the flips. Then I did a few more within the Chicagoland area.
Wow, that's really amazing. So what have you learned about like flipping properties? What tips do you have for somebody who is brand new to this? Do you have like any 2 or 3 specific tips, things they should know before getting into flipping homes?
Yeah, I think I think like the first thing is that really understand your numbers, because your numbers never lie. Sort of the general formula that I use, which most people use just the most part, is that your purchase price plus your rehab costs should not be more than 70% of your after rehab value. So again, I'll say it one more time, right? So your purchase price, so what you pay for it, plus your rehab costs, so the amount of money that you put into fixing it up, right? That total number should be less than 70% of what you think you'll sell it for after you've done all this work. And the reason you sort of want it at that 70% mark is because you've given yourself some sort of buffer in case you can't sell it at the price that you think you're going to sell it at, right? So that 30% is sort of your quote-unquote guaranteed margin, even though nothing is ever guaranteed, but it's big enough buffer such that if things go south or if you're over budget, right, there's enough room for you to still make some money. So that's number one. The second thing is that don't completely put your trust in contractor. And each day that you hold onto the property, that's costing money, right? From the standpoint of real estate taxes, from the standpoint of paying back those loans that you took, it's costing you money on a daily basis. So you have to stay on the contractors. And the third thing is that even when you hire contractors, right, never give the whole job to a single contractor, right? Make sure that you split it up piecemeal, because contractors are just never short of work, and they'll take on 20 jobs even if it's just one person. And they'll work on your property for maybe like a day or two, move over to the next person and do the same thing. So you're basically stuck with them for 6, 7, 8 months, and they just drag you along. So you're better off giving them smaller little jobs that they get done, get them paid, keep them moving.
That is so true. Because I'm currently going through that right now. So I just bought a property in South Africa, and I'm renovating. Well, I think I'm going to live in it for a while when I'm here. So I hired a contractor to remove the carpets. So there's 4 bedrooms. So I wanted all the carpets removed, and I wanted wooden floors. And then I also hired him to redo my patio, so change the tiles. And I got these sliding, like folding glass doors that he has to install. So it's been 3 months and we're done with the carpets upstairs. And he keeps saying, yeah, I'm going to come and complete the patio. But every day it's like something different. So I do agree about like splitting up the work and getting a different person, because right now that's currently something that I am personally dealing with. So those were really great tips, Brian. Thank you so much. So we actually met on Clubhouse. I hosted a room about people or tips for moving abroad. And you were one of the people who attended this session. And you shared some interesting things about moving to the US. So as anybody who is listening to this podcast right now, why would I or why should I consider moving to the US?
Well, yeah, that's an interesting question. So it's funny you asked me that, because I'm actually trying to move away from the US, right? And I mean, mainly for me, because, you know, I'm just at a different point in my life. I mean, I've put in my 20, 21 years here and I have young kids, you know, and I just want to bring them up in the same environment that I was, you know, raised in, right? But again, if you're somebody that's a bit younger too, I think if you're looking to sort of diversify your experience just from a life standpoint and maybe plant other roots elsewhere, right? So you come here, you work for maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 years, maybe you buy like a property, right? And maybe you like get a green card. It's not a bad place for you to have as a second option, as a place that you can come, you can call home at any point in time that you want to come back, right? In terms of, I mean, we're sort of all dealing with COVID-19, but just generally, right? Asset values here hold pretty well, and you know, and that's one thing I'll say is that the stability of this economy is something that, you know, should be something that should attract young people to move to the US. That's the biggest thing, right? And even as much as I talk about leaving this place, right, I'm obviously anchored by having assets that are here that I'll use as passive income when I leave the US.
Yeah. Because I also have an apartment there that's also making me some money right now, which I'm really happy about. But I do agree about stability and people considering moving there in their younger years, which is also what I did. So tell me more about your plans about moving abroad. So you are considering coming back to the African continent. Which country are you looking to move to?
Well, for me, being from Zimbabwe, South Africa is the place that I would like to move to because it's closest to home, and particularly Joburg, because Joburg is a short flight to Zim. And the reason why, well, mainly because I think number one, Zim has a lot of issues, and I know South Africa has a lot of issues too. But I think from the standpoint of just giving my kids like a softer landing based off what they from a lifestyle standpoint, I should say, South Africa is probably like an easier landing spot. And then, you know, just the cost of living when you're paying in USD in SA might be somewhat cheaper in NSA than in Zim right now, right? So, yeah, that's part of why I want to move back to specifically SA. And then, you know, I'm actually starting up like another fund now with I have two partners based out of South Africa. One's a South African lady, one's from Zimbabwe. I have another partner based out of the UK, and then another one based out of Colorado. And we are setting up like a fund right now. Well, it's been set up. We're just about to finalize things, but we're getting into multi-unit properties. So multi-family residential properties, or maybe like a mixed use, which means it's both residential and both commercial properties. And those are one of the things that I'm doing. That's going to be one of my anchor assets, hopefully, when I move back.
That makes sense. Yeah, I'm learning a lot from this conversation. So firstly, okay, I understand Johannesburg. But so I bought a property in Pretoria because Pretoria is the capital city and it's 40 minutes away from Joburg. So why I chose Pretoria was that it's more affordable and safer. And there's also like a whole lot of good schools in Pretoria. Plus, I grew up in Pretoria. So maybe that's why I just love Pretoria. But in terms of Joburg versus Pretoria, I found the homes in Pretoria to be more affordable and bigger than Joburg. So that's something you should maybe like keep in mind when you start searching for homes in South Africa, that Pretoria is a great city and it's close to Joburg, but also more affordable and safer. So I want to know more about like setting up funds and meeting. How do you meet all these great people who are interested in the same? Because for me, it's kind of hard to meet people who I'd be like, okay, guys, let's start this fund and let's buy these properties. So how do you find this network and what is the process of like registering a fund and starting something like that? Because this is something I personally would be interested in and I want to learn more. And also for people who are listening.
Yeah. So I think the first thing is that, you know, people that know me have always known that I have a passion for like real estate, and those that are really close to me are the people that know and understand some of the sort of deals or plays that I've done. And when things started going, when COVID happened, I just realized that there were new opportunities that were going to open up, and I started having a conversation with like one friend, and then he knew somebody else that had an interest in doing this sort of thing, so he brought two people to the table, and you know, that's sort of how it worked. We had another person who was a former director slash partner at the Big Four accounting firm, and they joined us for a while, but she had an opportunity to do something else, so she like had to leave the group for a few months. So it's basically through, you know, one person introduced you to the next person, but there's that one person that you know who knows you, and you know, just, you know, people who sort of share similar goals, right? And the people based in SA right now, their sort of goal is they do property there, and they're like, listen, we want to be able to diversify our income and be able to earn some US dollars, right? So
speaking about so starting to invest. So right now, if somebody wants to start investing in property and they literally don't have a lot of money or they don't know where to go or how to get started, would you have any tips for somebody in that kind of position?
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe to sort of go back, because I didn't answer your question about how to actually set up, right? So as a non-resident, a person who wants to do business in general in the US, right? You are eligible and you can set up like an LLC through pretty much any state, just for the most part. But people typically go with Delaware, which has more friendlier tax laws, right? But the other places like Montana, which are cheaper, and Wyoming. And then once you set up an LLC, it is actually now become a lot easier with some of these challenger banks to open a US bank account for your company. So if anybody wants to do any sort of business or own a US bank account, it's actually a lot easier now than it was before for most countries. I mean, there's certain countries like Zimbabwe, which are difficult or near impossible to open a bank account because of sanctions, right? So I think that's the first thing from a fund setup standpoint, right? Setting up like a sort of company. And then to be honest, if you want to invest and maybe you don't have the capacity to say, I don't have, you know, X amount of dollars to go buy a property, you know, for cash, right? To be honest, you got to find people or join some sort of syndicate where you put in your investment of X amount of dollars as a contribution to the fund. And hopefully those people who are running that fund have the ability or the means to borrow in the US, and then you can go out and get your property, right? Now, I'm not I never encourage people to go in and purchase any property just for cash, for purely cash, because I feel like it takes a lot more time to get the return on your money back, and you have all that money sitting there locked in. Yet there's potentially an opportunity cost of maybe taking some of the money and putting it elsewhere as a down payment into like another property. So I think I would never encourage anyone who has the ability to go out and buy something for cash to actually do that, right? Use leverage as much as you can. But sort of back to your question, you absolutely need to find people or groups or syndicates, and they're out there that will let you invest money, and you're an LP, and you sort of sit back and start earning your profits. So sort of my strategy or our strategy with our group now is that we invest in cash flow positive property. So looking for a property that's cash flow positive from day one. And you tend to find most of those opportunities in the multifamily properties. Anything that's probably like a three unit plus type of home. And in Chicago, you can find lots of those, right? So sort of back to like what I said earlier about real estate is very localized, right? In Atlanta, Georgia, that's very hard to find, right? But in places like here, if you find a three unit place, probably one of those units, or maybe two of those units, typically will probably pay for your mortgage, right? So yeah.
That's wow. Okay, I just learned so much. That is amazing. So okay, my last question to you, Brian, is if somebody wants to register a company in the US and get started, so how do they reach out to you? Is this a service that you offer, or do you have resources that you can send to somebody so they can get started? Because this sounds so exciting, and I feel like it's a great opportunity.
So through like our group, which is called Nura Capital Ventures, you can reach out to me via Twitter. And my Twitter name is Zim Juggernaut, ZimJuggernaut. And you can send me like a DM, or if you'd like to send me like an email, my email is brian@zingai.com. So brian@zingai.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much for taking time to chat to me. I learned so much, and I hope our listeners will find value in this episode.
Love this episode? Make sure to visit our website, www.unpack.co.za, to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover our fantastic bonus content. If you found value in the show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes, or if you simply told a friend about us, that would be helpful too. Thank you for listening.